Session number 14806.
Mr. Eddie Murray, side 24.
That's what I thought it was, 24. And so, yes, the superintendent, called Durham, as a matter of fact, which is my, you know, where I came from. And he said, no, we'll have to change this a little bit. He said, we can't send this up to the commissioner. But he said, I'll alter it so that it's respectful. And I'll send it through. I understand exactly what it's about. So, you know, within a fortnight, there was I on my way to Special Branch, a detective constable at Scotland Yard.
Did that feel good?
That felt extremely good, but a bit overpowering, overwhelming, shall we say. And I used to have to go down by bus, you know, from where we were living in Hendon to Golders Green Underground Station, where prior to that, when I was in uniform on a couple of occasions, people had threw themselves in front of the trains, you know, the underground trains. It was a recognised thing at Golders Green, which is open.
Yes.
And not a nice thing to see.
No.
But as soon as it happens, you know, there's always somebody that sees it happen and then calls everybody else, and you get crowds around an unfortunate happening like that.
Mm.
And they, you know, they turn around and go and be sick all over the platform.
Yes.
Like that. But you can't stop them. They won't be stopped. You
well,
tell
they
them it's a dreadful thing.
Say, they were, their curiosity, they go and look, they see it, and they throw up.
It's a dreadful thing. No, somebody's throwing themselves in front of a train. You mustn't go along there. It's not not for your eyes sort of business. It's been taken care of. No, they wanted it. And one solitary constable, of course, couldn't stop them. And so, you know, other policemen would come along eventually, you know. But it happened on a couple of occasions.
Mm.
Not a nice thing to see. Because as soon as anything like that happens, you see, they didn't have railway police there, but they call the nearest policeman. And there's a, there's a call, there used to be one of the call boxes on the corner there, Golders Green Station. You know, one of these blue lamp things, or TARDIS things.
Yes.
And then, so off to Scotland Yard I go, into the special branch, where, of course, everything is quite different. And I'm in civvies, I'm a detective constable, and you know, there's quite a bit of training to do there.
What sort of training did you do?
And the training was active training. You went around with a, whatever you were doing, went around with an officer who'd been there some time, you see, sort of a training officer, when he went out on his various duties. And most of the time, in those days, it was for naturalizations. And so I'd go out with this, Bill Jones it was most of the time, a real Welshman who's a lovely character, still writes to me in Welsh, and which I don't understand. But you know, intersperses it with English. So I get the text of it usually, and we meet up at Scotland Yard when we have a special branch due once a year. And so Bill Jones used to take me out on these naturalisation business, and I used to listen to him, and then perhaps after 6 months, I was allowed to do it myself.
So this would be a clearance interview for naturalisation.
Clearance, that's right. To, and, you know, very, very in-depth sort of business. Where these people came from, what their bank statement
were
was.
Were these East Europeans, or who were they?
Quite a lot of East Europeans.
Yeah. And how many of them?
A lot of Jewish people.
Yes. And did many of them not make the grade?
Well, we never knew. The special branch would be informed, but that would be an entirely different.
Right.
That would be the administrative side.
Did you ever have to? Did you have to make adverse reports on people if they made a bad?
Oh yes.
If their story didn't tie up.
If the story didn't tie up, we had to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth.
Mm.
And if it so happened that we even detected that there was a bit of a lie somewhere, then me as a junior officer, you see, I would say that, and then it would go on to a higher echelon.
Mm.
And somebody else would go along.
Mm.
But we used to have to get statements from them, giving us permission to go to their bank manager and have their
How did people mostly react to somebody coming around the house?
99% of them were scared stiff.
Yes.
Absolutely
yes.
Scared stiff that there would be an adverse report.
Mm.
And so, you know, one had to tread very, very carefully and get their confidence and deal nicely with them. Most of the time, though, some of them, of course, were real bastards and, you know, thought that it was their right to become British. And because they'd been living here for 3 or 4 years, and the majority of them were, you know, quite desperate to become British, and had reasons to suppose that if they went back to Germany or to Russia,
they'd been for a hard time.
They were in for a hard time. Yes.
What percentage do you have to write bad reports about? Would you say out of interest? I mean, if you can't.
Okay. You know, half a dozen, perhaps, in five or six years.
Oh, I see. Were they always conducted in English?
Always, but of course my German and my French always came in useful. But one of the stipulations, you see, for naturalization was that they had to read and speak, and it was up to me to specify whether they were good or poor or bad.
Were you, were you precisely what they expected as a police officer? I mean, you'd lived abroad, to say the very least.
I mean, yes, I think it came as a surprise to quite a lot of them that I was so familiar with their own countries, for instance, or with their own language. Mm. And yes, but most of the time I think they were grateful to be able to sort of relax, first of all, with their language, you know, and sort of get in to the English part slowly and the interrogation part slowly. Mm. And so
what approach did you use? I mean, were you say interrogation, or was it an interview?
It was interrogation. There's no doubt about that.
They were free to get up and go, but they're free to get up and go and not get naturalised.
Absolutely, yes, indeed. And some of them, we were quite sure that they had things to cover, but most of the time, they had a past to cover or certain things to keep as secret as possible. But, you know, most of the time, those things that they considered to be personal and very, very secret and confidential had no relationship at all to the fact that they were asking for naturalization. Mm. And it was, you know, irrelevant, shall we say, but nevertheless had to go into the body of the report.
What did you do? Methodical? I mean, how do you... What approach? I mean...
First of all, you
polite,
see...
Polite, harsh, monotonous? I mean, you know...
No, I think I was always soft-hearted most of the time. And put down, you know, the truth, verbatim, actually, what they said most of the time. But then, of course, our personal ideas and our own personal image, you know, our personal ideas about the person and recommendation or not to be recommended, etc., you know, would come into it at all at the end.
Right. What other duties were you employed on?
I used to go to Hyde Park Corner, for instance, and spend hours listening to people spouting and get to know the names of the speakers by various means. Either by asking the bloke himself, do you see, and he very often they were very proud to have stood up in a soapbox at Hyde Park Corner and realising, well, oh yes, you bloody coppers are all the same, do you see. You want my name and address? Well, here we are. There's my name, and this is where I live, do you see. And do as you're blooming well pleased, do you see. Very often it was like that, but on occasions, especially with the commies, they would, you would know that you were it was a losing battle to ask them for any information at all.
And when you went to, and they knew you, I knew it. You
were nine times out of ten, they
realized
knew.
You were the police.
You see, that we were special branches. Yes. I mean, we used to dress correctly. There were occasions, of course, when we were told, you know, that now this is dicey, do you see? Get into the mood and get into the character of the place that you're going to, do you see? And so I remember one old inspector who was at Scotland Yard, and I was on night duty, and he was a night duty inspector, so he would be there till about 11 o'clock or so and then go to the boozer. But I remember this one, he was, you know, I remember him sitting there, you know, with his legs crossed, his knees crossed, sitting, you know, you tell me, you know, I remember, you know, 20 years ago when I first came into the branch, and it was all started by an Irishman, you know, for the Irish troubles. And you say, yes. We were sick and tired of doing reports on these stupid bolshies, and we'd be sent to a meeting. You see, there'd be a notice up on the board, we'd be sent to the meeting, and we'd put our great big police boots, our uniform police boots on, do you see, find a pair and put them on, and then, get out our notebooks and pencils ready to take notes, you see. And then, of course, the manager or the organizer would see us sitting in the front row there with our hobnail boots on and our paper ready to take notes. And he'd call the one of the stewards and say, "He's a copper," you know. And then so the steward grew up and said, "You're a copper, mate." You know, and this is the story that this inspector's telling me. So, "Yes, what's it got to do with you?" "Well, out, you're not welcome here." And of course, being a steward and directed by the organizer, you couldn't stay in, you had to go, you see. I mean, I've used the same thing myself with other people at Primrose League meetings at Albert Hall when Churchill was speaking. Because if you've got the chairman's authority, you know, you can, using no more force than is necessary, exclude whoever, you see, from the meeting.
Right, yes.
Provided the chairman of the meeting decides.
It's private property, essentially.
Yeah, it's a private meeting. And so I remember on one occasion, a person who was to become famous in the communist movement and the CND movement and all the rest of it, there she was with a group of her followers. Can't remember her name.
Oh, I see.
And so there she was, and heckling, although Churchill lived on heckling at these meetings,
really?
You see. But it was the Primrose League, and so, it was a ladies' meeting and all the rest of it, and they started to object. And so, you know, the superintendent of police was there in uniform, you see. And so he came up to me and said, "Mr. Murray, I think, you know, we better get authority before we throw them out." And so I went up to the old man and I said, "I know you're not chairman, you see, but if you don't mind, I'll ask the chairman if we have authority to exclude these people." And the old man, of course, would have said no. But the chairwoman said, "Yes, please, Mr. Murray." And so, of course, I told the superintendent of police. So, and this woman was particularly obstructive and offensive. And I picked her up and carried her out. And the photographers were there outside, you see, and national photographers. And one of them took a photograph, and it appeared in the newspaper of me carrying out this woman. She had a double-barreled name and a good background, but she was a menace. So and I dumped her outside and told her not to come back again. And then the police were all there in force. They were kept out, and so the meeting went on. I took the old man back to Hyde Park Gate next morning. Of course, that evening I went back to the yard and typed out a report, you see, of what had taken place, and that I had used no more force than was necessary to get this certain person out, you see. And other people were thrown out, if you like, by local police. And so I put this report in, called into the superintendent, who said, "No, we don't want all this bloody rubbish," he said, "you know. You didn't have to carry her out. You didn't carry her out." So I said, "I did." "I don't want it in the report. It's not your job to carry people out, you see." So I said, "Well, what do you want?" So he suggested, part of my report. And I changed the report saying, "Oh, no, I know why I had to change it. Because the superintendent of police from Kensington had put in his report via the back hall. You see, and it had been sent up to, a copy had been sent to Special Branch, and it stated there, nothing untoward took place."
Ah, all right.
Because he was Prime Minister, you see. Nothing untoward took place. And so he said, nothing untoward took place, according to local chief superintendent, you see.
That,
So we can't have this. I said, newspapers came up, blazoned on the back page, of course, was Eddie Murray carrying out this character.
What other duties did you have with the special branch at that time?
Well, as I said, following all the lists, it was a special branch job, to keep tabs on notorious, shall we say, some of them were notorious, well-known followers of the communist or members of the Communist Party, for instance, the fascists, the anarchists, and all the other ists.
So that was all right.
This, you know, we kept tabs on them.
So which organisations were the main ones that were of menace at that time?
Well, those ones I've just mentioned.
Yeah.
And the anarchists had maybe a dozen members.
Really?
And this.
Who was? What about the fascists? What were they called? It was Colin Jordan, or was that before?
That's right. Yes, Colin Jordan.
He was one of the
leaders. Was practically the leader, and names.
Yeah.
But you know, when you mentioned Colin Jordan, yes, he was very, very much involved in the fascist movement in those days.
Well, was he called the fascists at that time? I've forgotten.
Yes,
I'm was sure. Yes. The British
fascists. Or the followers of Mosley, do you see? Oswald Mosley was about then.
Mm.
But
and the Communist Party of Great Britain, presumably.
And the Communist Party of Great Britain.
Yeah.
And of course, they had characters standing for election. There was one at Woodford, you know, standing against Churchill.
Right.
And he got about 500 votes, you know, to but Churchill's 30,000.
Yes, but I mean, there was a lot of violence with the fascists.
Oh, the fascists,
against
yes, of course.
Them. They kept getting beaten up.
Yes. They were called black shirts,
yes.
too. And that's the way they used to dress, with black shirts.
Right.
So they were well known. But that was. I wasn't detailed for either the fascists or the communists to start with. I used to have to go to their meetings because that was on a rota business, you know, and somebody had to, and you had to type out the reports, and nobody liked typing out reports because they were so boring. Nine times out of ten, nothing happened except that police were called in.
Where files were maintained of names and places
from the well, these reports,
yes.
The files were, of course, yes. MI5, of course, were received copies most of the time. I'm sure 99% of the time. But with Bill Jones, my particular area were the anarchists. And there weren't very many, but they were producing these pamphlets that we were finding in various places distributed. And they didn't have the name of the printer.
No.
Which is an offence, do you see? And so we had this job of finding the printer of these pamphlets that were coming out. And so eventually Bill and I were opposite the place where we were sure they were having their meetings, do you see? It was in Harrow Road. And it was right opposite the Territorial Army place. And so there for a whole week we were in front. We were in an upstairs room in the territory, first floor, surveying or watching, keeping a watch on this red painted door, which was opposite.
Was that a 24-hour watch? Or?
This was a 24-hour watch.
So
well, practically, no, it wasn't really. It was an 18 hours watch, though. We got there about 6 o'clock in the morning, because remember, the job that we had on our hands was to find where these handbills were being printed. And we knew that they had been distributed from this house, do you see? We worked it out. It took us quite a time. And there we were for a whole week opposite there. And Bill used to go out for his meals, and, you know, and I would be on my own, and then vice versa. We'd take turns going out to have a meal or to, you know, other things which we had to do. But 99% of the time we were there, Bill and I, keeping an ardent watch on this place. And suddenly one Saturday morning we were there, and there a taxi draws up in front of the house. And Bill says, "This is it, Ed, this is it." And so we watched, and there was a bloke getting out and loaded with these pamphlets. And so we dashed down the stairs, locked the door, dashed down the stairs, out through the front door, into the road, and we waited. Bill was this side, and I was on that side, and the taxi made to turn round, you see, after delivering the thing. And so we caught him. Bill and I were together, and so Bill said, "Right, mate, pull over, police." So he said, what have I been doing wrong?
Yeah.
He said, nothing. And so we got in, don't move. You know, we just ask you a few questions. Where did you pick that bloke up with these pamphlets? Oh, he said, I can't tell you that, he said. You know, something you're not entitled to ask. I don't know whether we were, and I suppose we were. Do you see? We were able to ask questions because we knew that an offence was being committed. And so we told him, look, you know, all right, drive to the yard, take us to the yard. We say, you know, well, he said, all right. Picked him up in, dear names. It's the one that comes down to Piccadilly, Shaftesbury Avenue.
Yeah.
So he said, well, what do you want to know for? That's not your business, do you see, we said. And so just take us back to where you picked him up. So he said, well, you're paying? That's all right, we'll pay. It's all on expenses, so the taxi driver was happy by this time. And he drove us to Shaftesbury Avenue, and he stopped off. As a matter of fact, he had to do quite a tour because it's on the right-hand side going up towards Cambridge Circus and Holborn. And so he said, there, down in the cellar. We brought the pamphlets up from there. All right, mate. No name and address. Took his name and address, number and all the rest of it. All right, mate, you know, you're not hear from us ever again, probably. So he said, well, all right, mate. He said, thanks, you know, paid him. And off he went. And we went downstairs. And here's this Jewish printer with all his machines set up, you know, one, two machines at the most. And he was doing his printing down there. And so Bill went to
him. On a Saturday morning.
On a Saturday morning. And so Bill said to him, you do pamphlets for the anarchists and you don't put your name on. So he said, me? No, no. How can you prove it? So, well, we've got a taxi driver outside, you see, waiting for us. And he came and carried some pamphlets up from here with a well-known anarchist, did he? Oh, we said, oh. Oh, well, I'll not do it again. And so Bill said to him, look, you know it's an offence not to put your name and address on. So he said, you just carry on printing the blooming things. But he said, I want 6 copies sent to me at Scotland Yard. The idea was, do you see, that if they went underground again, we'd have to spend days and days again trying to find the perpetrator of the offence. And so, you know, as far as I'm in the know, those pamphlets are still being sent to me and Bill Jones at Scotland Yard. So that was one of the things, you see. Yeah. We were devoted, if you like, detailed to watch anarchists. Mm. But in the meantime, we did lots and lots of reports, of course, on the meetings, as I told you. And then in 1947, it must have been, I was sent up, it was during the winter, I was sent up to Newcastle to get some idea of port work. In those days, we used to cover at least 6 or 7 ports. And since when, of course, those local police have established their own special branch, people, branches, to cooperate with immigration authorities at those ports. But in those days, we, in Newcastle, we covered the Quayside in Newcastle, North Shields, South Shields, and other places where ships, foreign ships, or British ships that had been abroad, came in, provided that they were, I think most of the time they carried passengers, some of them, only 6 passengers. Mm. But we used to also cover the Finnish, Scandinavian boats, like the Venus, that used to come into North Shields.
So, what did you do? You sat near the immigration?
Near the immigration, yes. And we worked in cooperation with the immigration people. And although we had no authority unless called in by the immigration, and if we recognized some offender, some person that was wanted, or things like this, I can't remember it happening, as a matter of fact. But if I had suspicions of a person that was coming towards the immigration officer, I'd give him a nod, because he would always look up at us, you see, and when the person was there, and we'd nod or something like this, or make him a sign, and then he would go into it carefully, and then you know, take him into a spare room where again we'd assisted the interrogation and you know, come to a decision. But, and we, the immigration officers, didn't have powers of arrest. The customs did, but they would always prefer to call in a policeman to arrest anybody. And so, you know, we used to watch specifically the immigration officer. And if we had time, we'd wander around the customs shed and become known to them.
Some of the people presumably were ones that they would stop from their book would be specifically for the police if the police were present. Or if they weren't present.
Yes, of course, they had books, and so would we, you see. And the immigration people, yes, they were. I don't think they relished the idea of special branch being about.
I was going to ask you, was there a conflict?
No. There wasn't. Was there a conflict?
Slight resentment.
There was a certain resentment.
Really?
That. And yet, we had our office. There were two of us up there, you see. He was a sergeant, and I was a PC. And I used to stay with my aunt. I had an aunt up there, and of course, my birthplace was only about 15 miles away. And so, I used to stay with my aunt, and then we had this office. And we organized our trips down to South Shields, down to places, to coincide, naturally, you'd see, with their movements. And there would be probably two officers going down to South Shields, and one of us would go with them in the same car, on occasion, two of us in the same car, if there was a big breakfast, like on the Venus, to be had. And we'd use the same car, you see. Sometimes they would use two cars, because if it was a big ship and a breakfast was available, then they would send the major part of their people. There would probably be about half a dozen immigration officers there, you see, because there were so many boats coming in, and there were different mooring places, shall we say.
Right. You say big breakfast. A big breakfast?
Yes.
And this has something to do with expense claims or something?
Absolutely,
yes. Right.
And it was very, very nice indeed to go onto the Venus and have a wonderful Norwegian breakfast, you know, that you could help yourself to, you know, with. Or if you want to...
Of course, there was rationing. Time.
Yes, indeed.
Yes,
I think
well.
Carried on
yes,
for quite
yes,
a long
yes,
time.
Yes, yes.
And so, but it was a saving, you know. It was. And other places we got either bigger or lesser breakfasts, you know.
Yes.
Sometimes
were they generous with the spirit? The
just occasionally, I was just going to mention it. Occasionally there would be no food but drinks to be had.
Right.
And one of the. Now, how did that happen? I know it was at Newcastle. I had one of the boats that came across from Ostend.
Really, it's a new
why boat. It would come that way, I can't understand. But I would. He used to bring flowers. He used to come in on a Sunday night, Sunday evening, from Holland and Ostend. And, you know, one of the officers there, a lieutenant who was on board, he'd say, you know, well, Ed, can I bring you some flowers over or something like this? And I used to receive wonderful bunches
really?
Of flowers and
yes.
pay for them, a small amount of money, really. And then I would take them to either my aunt or my wife used to come up and stay occasionally for her, you see. But I remember that sort of thing happening. And we also had to cover the airport, Cramlington, which is Newcastle Airport. But in those days, of course, there were very infrequent flights.
Did they ever give any useful information, the captains of these ships, or I say give, I mean, do you ever learn?
No, I can't remember anything specific happening. We were also told when VIPs were going out and coordinate our examination of outward-going passengers with contacts with the local police force to ensure that there was no hold-up as far as the VIPs were concerned.
Okay.
See the customs officer and the immigration officer and tell them, put them in the picture.
Right.
And they were always cooperative as far as that was concerned.
Okay. I mean, in those days, incoming passengers, I mean, who needed a visa?
Well, there were lots of these blokes, do you see, that I knew from following them down in London, you see, who were communists fascists, and then we had our books, and then we had the passenger list, do you see? And so we used to look at the passenger list. We used to have the manifesto before the ship got in. Mm. And we'd know and perhaps recognize a name, and we'd watch. And then one of us could follow him into Newcastle to see which bus he took or which train he took or where he went to and this sort of thing. Mm. This happened quite often, as a matter of fact, that one of us would have to go.
There would be... Okay, I mean, there would be people of interest actually entering the country who were communists or whatever it might be, or really anarchists.
Ah. Provided they were on our list, you see. And we'd make a note, and then, as I said, and then we'd have to put a report in, you see, to Special Branch in London, saying that such and such a person arrived on such and such a boat at such and such a time. Mm. You know, he went through immigration and nothing was discovered to be untoward.
So you did this in Newcastle and... For 6 months, and you were doing the naturalisation inquiries, and you were doing the subversive...
political meetings.
What, anything else in particular, or... I think that one.